Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I think this is week six of our quarantine period, and I think we're going to start to stage our team back into the office this week, starting with our trading team. But we're going to take our time getting the staff back into place. I think what I've learned two things during this this period. One is that I've had a lot of Zoom calls with family, and that the older members of my family are less technologically savvy than the younger members of my family. I had a call with my aunt and uncle this weekend, and it was wonderful to see them. But we worked through the technology glitches of the Zoom software. But we've had a lot of chances to connect. And the other thing that I'm learning is there's not a lot on TV that I really want to watch these days. So, Charlie, I'm going to confess, we started watching Netflix, the Outer Banks series last night. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
I've never heard of that, no.
Well, it had to go through a very rigorous vetting process within the family, and it passed all the censors. So we're watching the first season right now. So far, so good, but I'm intrigued by it. Like, love to hear what you guys think, if you've seen it or not. But that was my takeaway. There's not a lot on TV that I want to really watch. So there's not a lot in the capital markets right now that I want to watch either. This train wreck. Let's talk about this. I'm going to talk about the economy, the financial system, and what's going on in the capital markets, and then turn it over to Adam and Freddie to talk about equities and what we're doing in models. And then we'll cover the fixed income and the credit markets near the tail end. So let me kick this thing off. For us to make sense of this, we've always said this, we needed to break the economy, the financial system, and the capital markets into three separate verticals. Otherwise, we're just going to smush all of it together, and it's just going to be ugly. But that at some point during this, the capital markets would move in a different, in an uncorrelated manner with the economy. And I think that's what we've seen over the last 3 weeks, is we've seen a real strong rally in equity assets. Actually, and also in the credit markets as well. But the economic pain is still very early in the process, in our opinion. We saw the ISM index this past week, the April ISM dropped from 49.1 down to 41.5. Now, remember, ISM, that's manufacturing. Anything under 50 is retraction. Anything over 50 is expansion. And we've had probably close to over 3 years of expansion in the manufacturing sector, and it's just fallen through the floor there. And so this just illustrates the challenges that the economy is having since March. In our view, the only way that we can open the economy in a sustainable way is we need two things: easy access to testing and an effective way to control the spread of the virus. We think we're still a ways off from those two issues being addressed. So any reopening of the economy is going to be tentative, and it's the virus is still out there. So it's just going to be slower. If we see those two issues addressed, I think it would change our view of how rapid the economic expansion would be. The downside of this is the restructuring, that corporate restructurings that we're going to be working through, and that includes bankruptcies and business closings. We talked about this last week. We won't hit it hard, but it's going to continue. And then the other important thing is rent payments. We expect rent payments in May and June are going to be real challenged for the commercial real estate side. So on the financial system, so the Federal Reserve stepped in as the backstop for capitalism in the United States. And this is really a shift, we think, a shift in the role of the central bank. And it's really squeezing out investors that would hopefully buy assets at lower valuations. Now, there's still maybe a chance of that, but the Fed stepping in to provide all the lending and support has really helped to prop up the economy. The result is just that investors have been squeezed out. If you followed Warren Buffett's virtual annual meeting this weekend. He talked a little bit about that. They have not, as an example, Berkshire Hathaway has not been active in making any investments in the downturn. And I think he alluded to largely because the Federal Reserve stepped in front of them and was able to provide capital effectively to companies. Now, we can debate whether this is the role, whether it's the right thing to do and how it impacts capitalism. But the fact is, this is our reality today and it impacts how we invest. So as it relates now to the capital markets, bond yields are near historic low levels. Spreads are coming in. Their spreads are tightening on the credit side. We are still outside the tight levels that we saw last year, but there's significant value in credit-based strategies on the fixed income side. Watch, be careful of real estate. CMBS is going to start to show problems. We think, especially those deals that are heavy in retail and hospitality, that's going to be a challenge. And the S&P 500 has just had remarkable performance. Freddie's going to help me with these numbers, but I think we're 28% off the lows in March, you guys. Am I close on that?
Yeah, and we're about 15% off of all-time highs. It's only down 12% year to date now.
That is just remarkable given the carnage that we're seeing in the economy. But I think, and we'll get into this a little bit, we believe valuations in the equity side are a little bit on the high side. And be careful, there's concentration risk in ETFs, and Freddie brought this up last week. I think it's an excellent point, but we have to look for it. All of our sector ETFs and also the broad market ETFs, including the S&P 500, where the top five stocks now represent over 20% of the market value of the ETF. That's up from 10% back in 2019. So with that, let me turn it over to Adam. If you could kick us off on the models, and then we'll talk, we'll use that to launch into some equity discussion. Okay, guys, take it away.
Yep. So you kind of laid the groundwork perfectly there. So background coming into last year, we started to take off the large cap basis and move into a minimum vol ETF. As the market dislocated, that strategy did work, outperforming by about 300 basis points to the S&P 500. So we took that off after it worked. We put our basis back into large cap domestic stocks, and Greg, as you said, it rallied really hard. So just in the month of April, the S&P was up over 12.5%. And during that period, once again, minimum vol lagged as the market rallied, and so it was only up 9.5%. So what we've done is begin to put that minimum vol piece back on and reduce our exposure to just the large cap basis. As valuations look stretched, the economic data looks very weak and is going to get weaker. We're just not buying into this rally as being sustainable and volatility, going away. So reducing risk a little bit there in a model is across the board by selling a little bit of the large cap basis and buying minimum vol. So that's it. Model is. I'll turn it over to Freddie to talk about earnings.
Thanks, Adam. So we're about halfway through the reporting season. Factoring in all the results so far, along with the remaining companies to report, consensus is showing a 13% decline from last year's first quarter. This is actually bumped up by last week. We had some good earnings from staples and tech companies. We gave our earnings preview on Alphabet last week. Based on assumptions we made from Snapchat, we felt advertising concerns were overblown and that they beat estimates, which turned out to be the case with Google rising over 7% on its earnings release. Revenue came in at $41 billion. That was a beat, with ad revenues rising 10% from the previous year. And we had a similar story with Facebook, which rose 10% after its earnings release. Revenue is up 18% to $17.74 billion. So you're seeing cash-rich tech companies continuing to show strength here. Earnings for the upcoming week, General Motors, CVS, Allstate, Disney, Bristol-Myers, and CBS are some big ones to look out for. That's it on earnings. I will turn it back over to Adam on fixed income.
Yep. So just like equities, credit had a great month last month. The credit index was up over 5%. in April, where the ag was only up 1.77. So we've seen spreads really contract. That was largely driven by investment grade energy. So the big conglomerates really tightened by over 150 basis points over the month. So a strong performance out of investment grade. We've continued to see heavy new issuance. So last week was another big week, and it was really driven by Boeing. So Boeing came with $25 billion. That was the sixth largest public debt deal ever. So their rating got cut to BBB-, and if you recall, they took down a $13 billion credit facility right as this was kind of going on, and then they also cut their dividend. So they raised this debt so that they could turn down the $60 billion government funds that they were initially putting their hand out for. And really what we think here is this is just management not wanting to have to cap their compensation. They don't want to have to dial back their buybacks later on if things turn around. So that's what this really looks like, just putting all the, risk onto public markets. So big deal last week that kind of really consumed all trading.
Hey, Adam, I don't want to interrupt, but you were quoted in U.S. News and World Report last week on the whole Gilead. Part of this was just what's going on in the capital markets, but as it relates to Gilead and their push on a vaccine, and there are other companies working on a vaccine. How between you and Freddie, how do you guys view that? And is that really something that investors should look to from an investment standpoint? Is that even investable?
So I'll talk first, and then Freddie, like you hop in, you have a little more insight here. But from what I'm seeing is it's, you know, if you get it right and you get it, it's going to be a home run for you. And the problem here is the heavy investment it's taking to get this launched so quickly. You know, there's going to be a lot of companies that just earn through cash like it's firewood. So, Freddie, I don't know your outlook here.
Yeah. So on Friday after the close, Gilead actually received emergency FDA approval for using its drug to treat COVID. So we've had a few studies that have showed its shortened recovery time, but they've also had studies that have failed. But with FDA approval, it's tough to see what the outlook is over, I guess, in the next few weeks. We'll see.
Are there other companies that can benefit? I mean, or is this just going to be a Gilead story?
I think it'll be mainly Gilead. There's mid-cap stock, Moderna, and a few small-cap stocks, but Gilead's going to lead the way the whole time.
Well, I heard Pfizer's got tremendous resources behind research on a vaccine, and so is Johnson & Johnson, but I haven't heard, they haven't been out in the press with it, that I saw at least.
Yeah, and so it'll take them probably a while. Go ahead.
And the Gilead story is really one for high risk patients, right? That's the application that they have.
Yes, with severe symptoms.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm hopeful that within that whole pharmaceutical space that there's more progress and it's not just a one horse race. So sorry to interrupt, Adam. Go back to you.
Oh, you're good. We can turn over to Charlie. He can talk about high yield and energy, which is my favorite. You know, what is a barrel of oil buy today? I think last week it bought you a case of beer with the equivalent. So what do you got for us, Charlie?
Last week, I don't even think it could buy you anything. I think you were totally like Adam alluded to, fixed income had a very strong week. So U.S. high yield tightened in 33 basis points last week. And that included, there was a 14 basis point pressure to the widening side with May rebalancing. So that included Pemex being dropped from investment grade to high yield, Ford and Occidental. So even with that outward pressure, high yield still tightened in 33 basis points. So it was a pretty good week. It still pays to be up in quality. And I had that written down in quotations because we're dealing with junk bonds here. But last week especially, we saw both single Bs and double Bs return, have positive total returns, where Triple C saw negative performance, negative 1%. specifically. And so also, like Adam said, investment grade primary market has shown no signs of slowing down. I think last month, $285 billion priced. So I think that was a new monthly record. But high yield did seem to cool off a little bit. $2.8 billion of new paper price last week. Notable deals included Arconic and PolyOne, which both issued out new debt for liquidity support. Del Monte Foods was the lone CCC issuer that had $500 million of a five-year that came at 11.78%. Delta also issued last week, but the first line, our first lien on some of their higher profile airport slots was enough to keep their offering in the IG index. So over to the energy topic. Energy markets still continue to be incredibly sloppy. WTI crude oil did raise 17% to almost $20 a barrel, but that price still does vary widely based on delivery date. So you see June below $20, but you'll see July and August get over that $20 threshold. So prices were able to rise as production has started to wane. U.S. domestic rig count fell by 53 rigs. So now we're at 325 rigs, which is less than half of the highs that we saw in mid-March. And then some other plans by U.S. domestic companies include Chevron planning to shut down 400,000 barrels a day and Exxon dropping 75% of its Permian Basin by year end. Also, now that May has gotten here, the OPEC plus cuts have come into place, but that effect has largely already been priced in by the market. That's it for me. I'll turn back over to Greg.
So as you were talking, I'm thinking that what the answer to the question, how many quarter barrels does it take to buy a barrel of oil, or how many barrels of oil does it take to buy a quarter barrel of beer? Given the supply gut of beer that's on the market now because of canceled baseball games and spring events. Beer is worthless, and they're giving oil away. It's so dislocated now in the supply market, the supply of these goods. All right. So with that, you guys, I think that's it for the week. We've got earnings this week, and we've got more investment grade credit coming this week. So we'll keep you in touch with that. And we've got some more moves in the portfolio models that we're going to probably implement this week, given the rise in stock prices. So we will keep in touch, and you guys have a great week. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.